All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Thursday, August 3rd. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are from Daily Fantasy Sports Rankings. And if you don't want that much of a mouthful, DFSR.com. We'll do it, DFSR.com/MLB. We'll get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's going to include NFL lineups as well, or NFL optimal lineups and projections coming very, very soon. Not for preseason, but for regular season. Almost too soon to really wrap your brain around when you're in this business.
Because we're working on a ton of stuff for NFL season too. You should be able to get... We're hoping to make the site this year just a one-stop shop, not just for optimal lineups, but also all the little research things you like doing during the year too. So stay tuned for that as we continue to release it.
Yeah, judging by the emails I keep getting, dev team hard at work. I continue to just do whatever it is I feel like doing. But there does seem to be like there's a group of people that are working very hard on this.
Super baller of you just to do whatever.
I also just don't want to take any credit for it. Okay, a couple of things. We did not podcast yesterday because we had something come up, but there was news that came out the other day. I wanted to get your thoughts on this. DraftKings announced that they were going to set a new buy-in limit. Well, that's like probably the wrong word. They're going to set a new limit on what you would consider to be high-stakes players, and they deem this to be players that had played more than $1 million worth of contests over their, I'm assuming their tenure. I don't think they did year by year. I think they're going to say over the entire tenure of your existence on DraftKings, although I'll double-check that. If you have $1 million in buy-ins, you are no longer allowed to enter contests of $5 or lower, and contests that have less than a certain amount of people, guaranteed contests that have less than a certain amount of people in them. I need to double check that, but it's mostly the limits that I'm kind of interested in here, and that being the buy-in limits. Wondering your thoughts on that new policy from DraftKings. If you stand like sort of in favor of that, so neither of us qualify, though I probably am closer than you. I'm probably going to reach that limit, I suspect, sometime like the middle of next year, would be my guess.
Well, and what it makes me want to do is just buy back into DraftKings, honestly, because that's going to make those games insanely soft compared to the similar games of similar prices on FanDuel, which are already pretty soft. So it creates a huge incentive for me to move the bankroll over there. You know, I kind of had issues with DraftKings in the past. You know, nothing worth diving into here, but just basically hadn't played there as much for my own personal reasons, but this will be enough to get me back into it. I think it's incredibly significant for... Like, it's probably one more significant than people realize. And I suspect that when you test the average cash lines for the rest of the season after this decision goes through or went through versus what's going to happen going forward, I think it's going to be a huge, huge boon for casual players and even like solid players that just aren't in the top 0.01%.
And frankly, I think good for the ecosystem because this was like sort of the difference between people always want to make DFS analogous to poker. In some ways it is, in a lot of ways it isn't. But in one way it was not analogous is that the best players could just spread their buy-ins to the softest games, you know, just because doesn't require you to sit at the table or, you know, 10 table or whatever you're going to do.
In poker, like if I could have sat at every single table on party poker, I would have, but you're restricted by how much attention you could give. But if I could set a bot to play at every single table, I would have started with the smallest games because those would have been the softest. And pro players and, you know, casual players alike do this too. Like, even today, on a normal night, I'm not buying in. I'll buy in between, say, $200 to $1,000, depending on how much I like the lineups. I can spread that out among $2 to $5 contests on FanDuel. Like, that's... and those lineups are going in with a certain level of skill. Like, restricting this, I mean, it's actually just a huge hit to these top players' bankrolls, too. I'm actually surprised. I mean, I wonder if it's just going to lead to more multi-accounting or more like, hey, look, Chipotle addict's wife is playing DFS now, you know, like that kind of thing. But either way, it can't hurt because some percentage of people aren't going to follow through on that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. We've been sort of waiting for this to happen since we've been doing this, which has been a couple years. The idea that, you know, kind of just what we talked about, that you just don't want to... You don't want some of this, I wouldn't call it predatory, but you don't want the, because I don't think those top players are doing anything wrong necessarily.
No, like,
I don't
think they're just simply playing the game.
Because sometimes, you know, I use the word, but I've heard that word used before, and that's more insidious than it actually is. They're just doing the smart move, right? So, like, but now the fact that that's not going to be the case anymore, it will be interesting to see how cash lines move. It'll be interesting to see ownership percentages between the smaller games and the bigger games, because I think you will see some sort of dramatic shifts in how those kind of play out, considering that some of the biggest money do influence the ownership line. So anyway, all this being said, it's wait and see approach to see the overall effect. I think we both vote generally in favor of it. Like I said, There's some chance where I'm gonna hit that limit. Not this year, but I believe next year. So hopefully they raise the limit by then. All right, let's talk about Thursday in baseball. We have an early slate here and then an evening slate. Not every team is playing, so kind of two smaller ones to begin with here. The early slate only has three games. Do you see the early slate as one you'd be incentivized? I'm going to start really on FanDuel. There's kind of different considerations here, but do you see the early one as one you'd be incentivized to play considering the pitching matchups? And, you know, we have a game in Coors, so we're going to get like some pretty high implied run lines, but also, you know, we have a couple guys like specifically Quintana and Waka that are taking the mound. Is this a slate that you like the way this is kind of shaping up?
I actually really do. You know, Quintana in particular today looks like a great play. The Diamondbacks are one of these teams. Another one's the White Sox, which we'll talk about later, where they are insanely good from one side of the plate or against one set of handedness, where they're incredible against righties. And then they're just abysmal against left-handed pitchers. So they're bottom three in the league in terms of WOBA against lefties. And that's in spite of having their tremendous home ballpark. They lead the majors in strikeouts against left-handed pitching. It's just a dream spot. It's almost literally the best matchup you can get. And the fact that you're getting them out of Arizona only sweetens the deal to me. So, yeah, Quintana seems like an absolutely great play here. And that just really frees up everything else because Quintana's just 8,800. While he might not be like an ace in the conventional sense, the peripherals still are very good on him. 10 Ks per nine, basically, and 3.2 walks per nine. So, yeah, I love Quintana, and I love the way the lineups look once you get him in there.
And I like that you can count on the Diamondbacks to still be totally freaking clueless about how to make a lineup. And I know this is something I harp on, and usually I talk about the Nationals.
Or like someplace we can refer people to, like almost like a, you know, a command you can type into the chat where people can get your sense on how the Diamondbacks set their lineups.
Well, they added a new wrinkle. I didn't see this one coming the other day. It's almost like as if they were playing some kind of like lineup Raz with version of Raz with the Nationals, because they were like, you know what we're going to do here against the lefty, and I bet you they do it again today. We're going to bat David Peralta leadoff. He's significantly worse against lefties. Like he's like replacement level against lefties. We're going to hit him leadoff. We're going to hit Pollock second. Okay, couldn't get out of our own way, or weren't able to get out of the way there. We just have to play him. Then we're going to stick Adam Rosales in the third spot. Adam Rosales has a 650 career OPS. We're going to stick him above Paul Goldschmidt, who's got like an 1,100 career OPS or something like that.
If you just simply don't know about this or not, but yeah, it's called setting the table. What's the issue?
I mean,
set the table for Goldschmidt.
It's like totally inexplicable. Adam Rosales, they hit him third, then they hit Goldschmidt and Martinez, who are actually career lefty complete mashers, and then they just kind of round out the rest of the lineup. Sticking Rosales in there is really kind of like a hold my beer territory when you're making a lineup. It's just like, oh, you don't think we can do worse with this? Let's just stick our very worst hitter above like two sort of like not generational. Well, Goldschmidt's a generational talent in terms of like how he hits lefties. And JD Martinez is just like kind of a great hitter. It just is totally inexplicable. Getting two, I would say almost.
Because you simply seem to not understand. In your family, like when you were growing up, who set the table? Was it your dad? No. He says, Doug, set the table, because you're just a little kid walking around doing whatever. So you get the low guys, the people with no power, to set the table.
Then they smash plates.
And then Goldschmidt and Martinez, what do, Doug? No. They eat, son. They eat. They do that after. So it's weird that you don't understand this, but apologies to the listeners out there, but Doug will get it eventually.
Adding this many out expectations at the top of the lineup, just like above what they were already doing, is just like even just more of the case for Quintana. It's like, again, it makes total and complete no sense. I mean, like, anyway. So, you know, I love Quintana in this spot. Waka is a little cheaper on DraftKings, I believe. I'm going to look. So I don't know. DraftKings is kind of a different story for me on the slate. It's very difficult to fit. It's going to be very difficult to fit Waka and Quintana, even though neither of them are priced totally crazy over there. Waka's 9,700, Quintana 10,100. They've also done the old, we dare you to play a pitcher in Coors pricing here. Like they have Rafael Montero at 4,000 and they have German Germán Marquez at 5,600. And we basically ignore Greinke because I don't think we need to go there against the Cubs. I mean, on DraftKings here, I don't know if we want to play either of those two cheap guys. I don't know if it's worth it to, like, you kind of end up in the middle. Like, you can't play both of those pitchers and play the bats in Coors. How do you feel about the slate, like, lining up on DraftKings?
I'm pretty bad, I guess. Like, I think, I mean, everyone runs into this on DraftKings every night and every slate, basically, where you have to make some sacrifices in one of the pitching slots, but that pitcher two slot just looks a little too grisly for me. I'm certainly not going to run out Rafael Montero or whatever. And I'm also not really thrilled by the lineups that are left over when you X those guys out. It's just a short slate. There's not, I mean, there's only six total pitchers to choose from, and it's almost impossible to get two good ones. And when that happens, you just kind of got to cut your losses and move on. That said, no Sharks in your small games, baby, so maybe it still makes sense. I don't know. I'm just so curious to know how that's going to play out. I just think it's going to be game-changing.
Okay, let's move on to the evening slate here. Like I said, so just to sum that up, I think I like the way things are shaking out a little bit more on FanDuel. I suspect most other people will feel the same way. I think there's some case to just kind of lock Waka and Quintana into your lineups and just be left over with the bats and hope you can kind of get there, and knowing that you're not going to have as much exposure to Colorado as you thought you would. I think
on
that
DraftKings,
could,
you mean?
Yeah, on DraftKings. I think that could be that move.
Yeah, I think that lineup sucks so far off. It's only like a point or two off our optimal lineup. So who knows, as things shake out, as we get a money line on the Cubs game, that might just be how it shakes out, but
that's true. There's no over under on the Cubs game right now. Quintana's about a -130 favorite. My guess is it ends up somewhere like in the 8, maybe lower range considering the pitchers, although the wind is blowing out, which is always a problem. All right, let's move into the evening slate of games. Here, actually, we have, we'll just start. There's just two ace level pitchers going here, Kluber and Wood. They're both priced right around the same area. They've been both pretty great this season. I think people are going to be looking at this as being the major decision that they make on the 7 o'clock slate of games. Our projections for them are nearly identical here. Both on FanDuel, we have them both projected right in that 37-point range. And then on DraftKings, we have them both in the 20-point range. They're basically saying they're about the same pitcher today. Does one strike you as a better play here than the other between those two top-tier? I would call them near elite plays.
Yeah, I'd say Wood. He just has the dramatically better matchup with Atlanta. I think they're both, I mean, I kind of like Kluber for DFS in general, just because he goes deeper into games and the pitch counts are a little bit more reasonable. But back-to-back games for Wood, 199 pitches respectively, I think they're kind of lengthening the leash on him. He's also been pretty bad in those games, so take it for what it's worth. But I think just basis on the basis of the dramatically better matchup, I think I'd lean in his direction.
Yeah, one of those games that he was bad in was against Atlanta, who he faces again today. He only went 4 2/3, let up 9 hits, 7 earned runs. By far his worst game of the year. And so I think that probably turns some people off to him. It doesn't really move the needle at all for me. Atlanta is a team that just really, and I'm with you, I would choose Wood in this situation as well. Atlanta's a team that didn't really have much in the way of righty power to begin with, and then Matt Kemp got hurt, and now they really don't have anything. So they lead off with Inciarte, then they have Brandon Phillips, so they go lefty with Inciarte, righty with Phillips, then lefty with Freeman, and then I don't know, Tyler Flowers, someone like that sitting in the middle lineup, and then it really drops off a cliff after that. It already dropped off a cliff after Freeman, and it really drops off a cliff after Flowers. So that lineup is just really not anything that you need to be too worried about. I'm not concerned at all with the way he pitched against them last time. He's been, I mean, among the best pitchers in the league this season, just with his peripherals. And the only thing that's keeping his base price at sitting at where it is now, I mean, the two bad games in a row have kept the price down, but also just like what we talked about for the course of the season is the pitch counts remain so low that he's really never been able to get up into the upper echelon of pricing just because he's just kind of never scored enough points. So, and I believe that to be the case of why that price is there. So yeah, I know I'm with you. I'd rather pitch Wood here. After those two guys, I do not think you can pair them together on on DraftKings just because you're allocating somewhere $22.5 worth of salary. Is there a starting pitcher two that jumps out to you here? We have a couple other names here Porcello, McHugh, Gray, Cahill, guys like that. Any of those guys interest you at all? They're all coming a little bit cheaper, and you're probably going to have to pair one of them with either Wood or Kluber, whoever you pick at the top.
Yeah, they're all coming cheaper, and for good reason. I guess, so we'll just run them down really quick. So McHugh is a guy with talent that has had major league success. He's somehow just kind of gotten worse from 2014 when he kind of exploded onto the scene with almost Cy Young level stuff for a little while there. And then it's kind of just drifted downward, even though it was kind of masked by some good luck with wins in 2015. And then, kind of a bounce back peripherally last year. But the thing with McHugh is, I just don't think you can trust the innings very much. I think a lot of baseline projections are going to have him, kind of at his historical averages, which is roughly 6 innings per start. But he's only been doing 5 innings per start, and I have no reason to believe that's going to be any different tonight unless we get, some kind of word that he won't be on a specific pitch count. And then there's actually just still a question as to if he's not on a pitch count, is he still the type of guy that you want to run out at this point in his career? I mean, the home run rate has been very troublesome for him. He's continued to give up a lot of fly balls, and that just doesn't really work when you don't have the stuff to put guys away. So I'm not super high on McHugh. Porcello, I think, is an interesting play here. Another weird guy where the Ks are up at an all-time high for him. He's added a little bit of walks. That's not too bad, but he's giving up a ton of hard contact. It's tough to know, you know, what the exact cause is, but the home run rate's through the roof, 1.6 home runs per nine. The BABIP is up at 332, which is similar to where it was last year, and this is all coinciding with this new approach since he's joined the Red Sox as well. I'm sorry, that was the 2 years ago BABIP in 2015. So I don't know. I still think he might be the safest among this group, but a long story short is, as always, it's going to be tough to trust whoever you choose.
I much prefer Porcello's matchup here. The White Sox are team. You know, they traded off some at the deadline. They really don't have. Well, so it's teams going in opposite directions. So it's McHugh versus the Rays, and then Porcello against the White Sox. And this is why it's always tough a little bit to trust the season averages on the team. Right, because like right now, if the White Sox lineup is to be trusted and what they've been sort of running out lately, a guy like Tim Anderson is going to hit leadoff. That guy's an absolute K machine. Saladino is another righty. Abreu is fine, whatever. Davidson's a K machine. Kevon Smith's a K machine. Lory Garcia is a K machine. Like, a lot of these guys strike out a lot. And so I do think the strikeout expectation for the White Sox is up over. And we calculate this once the batting lineups are completely in, but I think the strikeout expectation is up for a team like the White Sox for Porcello. I like the matchup. Vegas certainly likes it. He's minus 230. That, to me, is probably almost the entire case. Like, the 3.8 implied runs for the White Sox and the minus 230 expected money line, or the money line that kind of fuels some of the win expectation. It's the only problem with Porcello is just like a little bit more expensive than McHugh. So McHugh's 7,500. Porcello's 9,700. McHugh, though, he faces a Rays team who went the other direction at the deadline. They actually improved on their one weakness, which was lefty power. So they added Duda to the middle of the lineup. And you actually have a real problem when you face them now, because they hit Dickerson the leadoff. He's been excellent this season. Then they are going to throw Duda at you probably like in the three hole. They have Brad Miller has come back. He has some power to him, though he strikes out a lot. Their lineup is just like significant. Oh, Logan Morrison sitting in the middle of the lineup. So their lineup is just facing righties seems to me as just like significantly better now than it was like a month ago. And that makes me a little bit worried about McHugh. So I think I'm willing to pay that $2,700 extra on Porcello, kind of all, just on the matchup alone, considering their peripherals like aren't too far off from each other. I mean, like,
no, and the matchup is significantly better. I mean, the White Sox, I talked about the Diamondbacks, the White Sox have been the same thing, but flip-flopped. So they're terrible against right-handed pitching and actually pretty solid against lefties. And yeah, to your point, I mean, our system accounts for this inherently because it doesn't use historical averages. It uses the actual data from the specific players who wind up in the lineup. That's why when lineups lock in, oftentimes projections change pretty dramatically, not just for the hitters, but for the pitchers as well. But yeah, I think all that makes total sense. I think there's other factors too, like just the certainty around the pitch count and so on, that makes Porcello just almost objectively the safer
player. And the list of guys, well, there's a couple other pitchers. So Sonny Gray's making his Yankee debut tonight. I don't really think you need to go there against Cleveland. He's a pretty big underdog, and the Cleveland's just one of the better hitting teams in the league. So no thanks. What are your thoughts here on Trevor Cahill? He's had sort of like a different season. Well, he's kind of turned himself into a somewhat different pitcher over the last two seasons. He gets Seattle in Kansas City. Any interest at all? Mostly I'm throwing him out here because he's cheap. He's only 6,200 on DraftKings. And if you're going to roster one of those really expensive pitchers, I do think there's some case to be made to just like take a pretty big savings like down to guys like McHugh or possibly Cahill. Does he interest you at all here?
Cahill's a really interesting upside play. I mean, he's got double-digit Ks per nine this season. That's up from nine last year. So, you know, the K numbers have been on the rise basically for the last several years. He's still only 29 years old. I think a lot of people think that he's older than he really is because he came up so early with the A's in 2009. But he's still just 29 years old. And you can still make improvements in your age 29 season, especially when you have 1,200 major league innings under your belt at such a young age. Now, you love the ground ball rate as well. I should throw out there the 57% ground ball rate should limit some of his downside risk. And the price is very attractive too. I think Cahill's probably, generally speaking, underestimated by the DFS community. Now, he still has his own warts. Like, the BABIP is high, and it's going to be high for a guy who gives up a lot of hard contact and especially a lot of ground balls. He allows a high home run to fly ball percentage, again, on the same basis of that hard contact. So it's never... you're never going to feel super safe with Cahill, but that's built into the price, right? So safety relative to price, he might be right there in that same conversation with guys like Porcello and McHugh.
His jump in K's like over the last two seasons is directly in line with him just throwing a curveball more. Like, so he hadn't really thrown a curveball somewhere around a little less than 20% of the time throughout his career. He's throwing that curveball. I just had it in front of me. Jeez. He's throwing the curveball 23. Sorry, no. He threw the curveball 11% of the time throughout his career, and now he's throwing the curveball 23% of the time. And last year he threw it 20% of the time. Like that, and that's exactly when you saw the K's start to jump, right? So like,
yeah, well, that's when you start to sell the home run to fly ball jump too. And it's, you know, it's all part of the same package. Like, curveballs are great for striking people out, and they're also great for high contact, especially, or hard contact, especially in the air. So yeah, that all fits the same.
And I do like when I see like a definitive like difference. Like, this is the difference between like, oh, Jason Vargas is striking a bunch of guys out at the beginning of the season, and you're like, he's not doing anything different, he's just getting lucky. Like, but when you see that, like, over the last two or three seasons, there's been some kind of marked change that's directly in line with like some other change in his profile, I do like to see those things. I do. That's where I do think some of those gains, at least in the strikeouts, are sustainable. His ERA is a bit higher than his xFIP, so, you know, the xFIP is in that 3.5 range. It's just pretty good. Seattle's, you know, a decent matchup, not great. And they have a couple of bats at the top, like Cano, and then hitting Dyson up there. Maybe Ben Gamel comes back tonight. But the bottom of their lineup kind of drops off pretty significantly, especially after Seager. So now, I like him in the spot. Probably more of a GPP play to me. But I am encouraged that I think that the K stuff is sustainable. We'll get to some stacks here in a second. Hit us up with a sponsor before we do that, though.
Yeah, I'd love to. So I'm going to bring back NoHalftime.com, Doug. NoHalftime, a terrific app for people who want to play sort of a different kind of daily fantasy sports contest. What NoHalftime does is they allow you to basically make these challenge bets, right? So, or challenge games of skill, I should say, where you pick a player and then you pick someone else that you think that guy's going to outperform. So you might say, hey, I like Trevor Cahill over Rick Porcello. You put that into the app. You issue it for whatever amount of money that you want. And then if someone accepts it, great, it's game on. If no one accepts it, then the money is refunded to your account. As you can imagine as well, there are also hundreds, if not thousands, of other challenges issued on any given day that you can kind of scroll through and find the ones that are best for you. So it's a great way to feel like you're always getting your money in good. You have perfect information about who you're playing against, and it's fun. It's just a good time and a good way to hedge, especially if there's a guy you really like that doesn't show up in optimal lineups or whatever. So NoHalftime.com, use promo code DFSR, and you'll get a $25 bonus up to a $25.
Yep, we love NoHalftime. They've been great to us over the years. Glad to have them back on the sponsorship role as we go into football season. It's a really great football season companion as well, just because they just kind of figured out this niche spot in the industry. We really like them. Really slick interface. Very, very easy to use. All right, let's talk the evening slate of hitters here. You know, one team kind of jumps to the top here, at least in just implied runs to start. The Red Sox up over 6 implied runs. Are we trying to fit as many of these guys in against Miguel Gonzalez as possible? Do we want to spread it? I mean, there's not really many games. These short slates kind of will usually typically concentrate a team. I think we have 10 games. I mean, there's enough. But do you see the Red Sox as the top stack tonight?
Yeah, I sure do. Miguel Gonzalez has been a guy that we've been harping on for what feels like years now, and he's just still doing the same thing, if not worse now than ever. 5.2 Ks per 9, 3.4 walks per 9, giving up a ton of fly balls, a ton of home runs. Can't stay in games, so you figure that the Red Sox are going to get a great shot at the bullpen here. And from top to bottom, it just seems like a great play. So fit in as many of these guys.
Eduardo Nunez has added some pop to the beginning, top of their lineup. He's been excellent since he came over in that trade. They have shifted their lineup around. You know, they moved Devers up to the fifth spot. He's looking like a nice play here. Hanley still coming way too cheap on at least FanDuel, 2,900. It's too cheap for a guy with a team that's got 6 or plus implied runs. If you're hitting cleanup at under 3,000 in that lineup, you kind of just are lock and load territory to me. I wrote up Betts as like being, well, he's like almost an MVP candidate for me this season, mostly based on the fielding too. Like, his offensive numbers don't look that great, but he's been great in the field, which has really boosted his WAR. Still, though, top of the lineup, table setter, exactly what you want. Really, just up and down the lineup.
Table setter.
A stupid cliche, but whatever. I think it must have been like left over in my brain from when you said it before. It's kind of locked into like the. I'm probably gonna say it again today too. That's just how my brain works. Like, now I'll say it like two or three times today. You know, in ref, like when I'm talking to my wife about baseball, because and her eyes are just like gently glazing over and just like trying to be polite. But Red Sox up and down the lineup here today. I think you're going to see at least our lineups are going to just kind of go the stacking route with them, and then just try to fit in some of the pitchers around them. After them, where else can we go? Other teams in good spots here on this evening slate.
Yeah, so a name that always tickles my fancy on the pitcher side of things is Matt Boyd. He's facing the Orioles today, which have, you know, considerable right-handed power in that lineup. And he's just bad. He's very, very similar profile to Miguel Gonzalez. Addition from the left side of the plate, or left side of the mound. High fly ball rate. The BABIP is very high this year, so I guess you could argue that he's been unlucky, but he gives up so much hard contact that his career BABIP is 314. So, you know, I don't think you can call too much of a luck. The XFIP is over 5. The K rate's below 6.5. He's just a great guy for anyone to face. And the Orioles, you know, they can make some room for you in the top of that lineup, like, you know, the various right-handed guys that are considerably better against lefties. Shoup comes to mind there as guys that maybe you won't be able to play on any given night, but when they've got a great spot against a terrible left-handed pitcher, they off all of a sudden.
Yeah, he's going to be in trouble here. He's going to have to run through 8 of 9 righty bats in this lineup. Like, Davis probably the sole lefty bat in the lineup tonight, and a lot of these, even the bottom of the lineup guys are better in this platoon split. Like, Wellington Castillo, that's much better side of his split. They got Tim Beckham here. That's been an upgrade over what they've been he's not been great, but he's definitely an upgrade over what they've been throwing out in the shortstop slot this year.
You can play Mancini there with me. I mean, he should be cheap batting towards the top of the lineup. There's a lot of, Jones and Machado, not conventional lefty crushers necessarily, but given the Vegas toll here, Vegas doesn't seem to mind it.
The Dodgers, I like the Dodgers in this spot here against Sean Newcomb. Now, he actually does have some K stuff, which always worries me a little bit. He also walks the ballpark, so in 48 innings this year, he's walking more than 4.5 batters per nine, which is obviously just terrible. He hasn't been able to last very long. He's one of these, like, just classic, kind of three true outcome kind of guys. I'm striking you out, I'm walking you, or I'm allowing a home run. That's been his issue so far this season.
He's like a middleman, if you will.
The top of that lineup for the Dodgers, Chris Taylor, Turner, you might see Kiki Hernandez move up a little bit, Puig. The guy that I'm actually most focused on here is Austin Barnes. Barnes has been awesome this year. Barnes has got a 950 OPS this season. Yeah, sure. He's actually been pretty platoon neutral. He just doesn't get enough spots to hit just because of Grandal being in the lineup. But his numbers would strike you, at least from this season, as he could be an everyday catcher from the offensive side of things, because he's been just awesome. He'll almost definitely be in the lineup. He's basically coming free on FanDuel at 2,400. I think you see him as just the overwhelming chalk.
Yeah,
and I think that that's the guy I'm probably most focused in, at least for cash games. I'd like this spot for cash games. I think they're just a little too expensive, and the Red Sox just have a slightly better matchup. But I do love Barnes in the middle of that lineup, and he should be there. Anyone else here before we get out of here for the day for this evening slate?
Yeah, I've got two more, and they're, I guess, maybe more in the high upside, but maybe not cash game appropriate category. So one of them is the Pirates against Salvatore Romano. The Pirates this season are not world beaters. They're not especially good against right-handed pitching. But Romano, I talk about the opportunity we get sometimes to go up against pitchers who simply might not be major leaguers, and the fact that guys like, say, McCutchen, if he's going to face a guy like Sal Romano, it's just going to be, it's kind of like playing a different game altogether. Romano this season, the thing I'm really keying on here is 5 starts, 7 walks per 9. Like, you can't make that up. It's almost impossible to walk that many batters and get to pitch 20 innings in the major leagues in any given year. The minor league numbers don't necessarily support absurd walk rates, but if the stuff simply can't keep up, the guy's only 23 years old. If the stuff simply can't keep up, he just might be one of the worst true talent pitchers in the majors right now. Now, we might not be too. We're still dealing with small sample sizes, but he's been out there for fewer than 4 innings per start. I think he's probably terrible, and I think that people will sort of be off it just because there's a lot of other good options here, but Vegas is into it. A pretty solid implied run total here, and there are some lefty bats you can play. I mean, Frazier's not really a high upside play necessarily, but you can get Josh Bell in there, maybe Gregory Polanco if he ticks up in the lineup. But it's an interesting spot, at least for me, for big tournaments.
The only thing that knocks their run expectation down here is probably the park. It's very tough to hit in Pittsburgh, at least for power. But I'm with you on all the other points about matchup.
Yeah, but at some point, if the home run derby is in Pittsburgh, people are going to hit the ball over the fence. You know what I mean? Like, the guys like Romano tend to lend themselves to just outlier sorts of outcomes. You know, I mean, he could go out there. He's also striking out a lot of guys, so maybe it won't work. And again, it's not a cash game safe play, but I do like it. And then the last one before we get out, and it's, perhaps even a little bit chalky, is the Astros. Now, the Astros are expensive, and that makes it tougher to fit them into cash game lineups, especially when we have guys coming a little cheaper in arguably better spots like the Red Sox. But if you want to pivot onto another known quantity that has probably an underratedly great matchup, I think they're a great spot. Blake Snell, he was a guy that had a little bit of pedigree, double-digit K per nine stuff in the minors. Kind of has shown some of that in the majors, but the walks have been through the roof for this guy. He's now got 157 major league innings with better than 5 walks per 9. And a team like the Astros that features both patient and excellent hitters can really take advantage of a guy who doesn't know where the ball's going. So, you know, again, probably you can just do better at similar prices for cash games. But if you want upside, I don't think there's any team with greater upside than the Astros today.
Yeah, Snell just really hasn't been able to figure it out in terms of just control, just too much stuff out of the strike zone. That's death for a team against like the Astros, especially guys like Altuve, even like Evan Gattis at the top of the lineup. I actually do like there's a situation I think you could be in a nice situation here with like a wraparound stack. I usually don't like doing that too much, mostly because the guys at the bottom of the order are so bad for most teams. But the Astros don't have that problem, like Bregman, Mariznick, and then if you want to skip Reddick and go to Altuve, like that wrapping that stack around against the lefty here strikes me as like a nice play. Actually, Bregman and Mariznick are like, well, Bregman specifically is not very cheap. $3,200 for a guy batting ninth or batting eighth is just like not something you can do in cash games. But doing that kind of like little mini stack for guys that can actually hit the ball and actually just have like a bunch of power upside, especially at the bottom of the lineup. Like no other bottom lineup has that much power upside than the Astros. Like those guys can really mash. They would probably hit much higher if they were on any other team. All right, we're gonna get out of here. Thursday in baseball. I skipped a day. Early slate looking okay with some of the pitching, like the way the evening slate is shaking out here, like when pitching kind of jumps to the top and it's sort of easy to pick out some of those cash plays. DFSR.com/MLB will get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. Keep an eye out for all the stuff we have coming up for football as well. We'll be back again tomorrow talking a full Friday in baseball. Buddy, enjoy your Thursday.
Don't worry, I will.